Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. This week, can the Grammy Awards ever escape controversy? Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there.
As ever, we are going to be taking a look back at some of the biggest and most interesting music industry news stories of the last week. A week when the Chair of Parliament's Culture Select Committee, Julian Knight MP, said that he will happily name and shame anyone in the music industry found to be pressuring artists or songwriters to not speak out as part of the ongoing inquiry into the economics of streaming.
Yeah, so a little conspiracy theory being added to Parliament's investigation into the economics of streaming.
Well, it's very in vogue at the moment, isn't it?
Or maybe it's not a conspiracy theory. Maybe it's just a theory. But yeah, so Parliament's inquiry into the streaming business model we've talked about before here on Setlist and we've reported about a lot in the CMU Daily is ongoing. There's another oral hearing coming up. So as this podcast goes out, I think tomorrow will be the next hearing where they'll get three more artists and three more industry people to talk about everything. So this is ongoing. We don't know how many of these oral hearings there's going to be. Maybe they'll carry on forever. You sort of sense, I mean, don't get me wrong. It's important to get the artist's voice here. It's important that these are artist-driven to an extent. But, I mean, now Rogers is doing the next one. I just can't help thinking that maybe the MPs are like, it's kind of fun to chat to pop stars. Maybe we'll do three of these a month forever so we get to meet all of our musical heroes. But, yes, at the first of the old hearings, which I think we talked about on Setlist. In fact, was that what we did last week on Setlist?
It was, yes. I'm glad you're staying on top of what we talk about.
And at that first oral hearing, four artists were speaking across the two parts of the session, including Nadine Shah. And I think it was her in particular who said that she decided to come forward and to speak out. But she knew that quite a lot of other artists had similar concerns about the streaming business model. Now, whether or not those are concerns with Spotify or whether those concerns are with major labels or whatever, but that they have some concerns with the way streaming works, but that some artists were nervous about speaking out. They were certainly nervous about criticising the streaming platforms or the major labels because they were at a point in their career where maybe they need the support of the streaming platforms to get playlisted, or they are currently working with a major label, or maybe one day they would like to work with a major. And so they're nervous about speaking out in case they are negatively impacted in terms of not getting playlisted by Spotify or not getting the deal that they would like from a major record company. So that was something that Nadine Shah said. But then we should note that Julian Knight, the chair of the Culture Select Committee in Parliament, said that he'd now heard from various sources. That's what sounds a bit like a conspiracy theory, doesn't it? Various sources that some artists were being discouraged from speaking out. And I'm not sure anyone is saying there's been tangible threats. We will not playlist you. We will not sign you. But that some artists and songwriters were being urged not to speak out. This is the allegations that's going around. Don't know how credible it is. But crucially, what was interesting is that Julian Knight MP, chair of the Culture Select Committee, put out a very stern statement saying that anybody discovered to be pressuring artists and songwriters not to speak their mind on this topic, well, they would name and shame those people, and ultimately, those people might be declared as being in contempt of Parliament.
Which sounds like something you probably don't want to be.
No, not really, because I think that possibly puts you on the same list as Viagogo, and nobody wants to be on that list.
It's not the best list to be on. Yeah, so Knight said, "We would take a very dim view if we had any evidence of anyone interfering with witnesses to one of our inquiries. No one should suffer any detriment for speaking to a parliamentary committee, and anyone deliberately causing harm to one of our witnesses would be in danger of being in contempt of this House. This committee will brook no such interference and will not hesitate to name and shame anyone proven to be involved in such activity. Anyone who wants to come forward to speak on this issue or any other issues should get in touch with the committee and will be treated in confidence."
So if you fancy being held in contempt of Parliament, find yourself an artist, demand that they do not speak out about streaming, and, you know, your ambition could be fulfilled.
Yes, if that is anyone's particular ambition.
Well, you know, in 2020... you got to seek the achievements that are in any way viable, haven't you? But anyway, that was interesting, wasn't it? Be interesting to see what happens at this next oral hearing. But, and I cannot stress this enough, We've talked a lot about this select committee inquiry. I mean, have we? It certainly feels like we have. Maybe we haven't as much. Maybe I have.
No, well, we talked about it before it had started, and we talked about it again now it has started, and now we're talking about it again, and they haven't got to the second hearing yet. This is the third time we've talked about it.
And as you can imagine, I'm also talking about it a lot in just everyday conversations outside of the podcast, outside of the CMU Daily. But the key point is, we are not going to talk about that select committee hearing on this edition of Setlist. It is not why we are here today.
No, later on we'll be discussing the $3 million legal battle between Chance the Rapper and his former manager. But first, the nominations for the 2021 Grammy Award were recently announced, and everyone was totally happy with them and made no complaints. No, not really. There have been so many complaints. Big name artists without nominations have been using recent controversy around the awards to make various claims of corruption and just generally getting things wrong. The Weeknd in particular accused organisers of corruption after he received no nominations at all, despite being absolutely everywhere this year, which has picked him up support from various artists, whether directly, like Halsey, who has also complained about her lack of nominations and claimed that The Weeknd was robbed, or Ellie Goulding, who put out quite a cloaked statement where she didn't mention any names, including The Weeknd and the Grammy Awards, she just talked about awards generally.
Yeah, and as for The Weeknd himself, he took to Twitter, because why wouldn't you, and said, "The Grammys remain corrupt. You owe me, my fans, and the industry transparency," he said. There was also a conspiracy theory doing the rounds around The Weeknd not being shortlisted, to the effect that he's playing the Super Bowl halftime show next year, and then the rumour was that the Grammys had wanted him to do an exclusive set for them as part of their award show, and then got pissed off when he agreed to do the Super Bowl. And then the conspiracy theory goes, ah, that will be why he wasn't shortlisted. We should add that the Recording Academy, which obviously owns and runs the Grammys, they have denied that anything dodgy was going on. They overtly denied that gossip about the Super Bowl, saying, "We would have loved to have Weeknd play the Grammys and the Super Bowl. That would have worked for us. And anyway, all these shortlists were done ages ago before any of that was a conversation." But Harvey Mason, who's heading up the Recording Academy at the moment, in addition to responding to that specific gossip, also said that there was nothing corrupt going on. There was nothing dodgy going on regarding The Weeknd not getting any nominations. He did concede. I mean, I'm paraphrasing slightly, but he did kind of concede. It was a bit odd that The Weeknd didn't get any nominations, given, as you say, the year he had had. So he was conceding that it's not surprising people were surprised, including The Weeknd, that The Weeknd wasn't shortlisted. But then he basically insisted that everything was above board, there was no corruption going on behind the scenes, and then basically said, there's a finite number of awards, there's an awful lot of artists making great music, not everyone can be a winner, was basically what he was saying.
Yes, there are fewer nominations than the number of deserving artists, he told Billboard, but as the only peer-voted music award, we will continue to recognise and celebrate excellence in music while shining a light on the many artists that make up our global community.
Now, of course, artists being annoyed that they don't get shortlisted for prestigious awards in the years when they've been particularly active, I mean, that's not new. That has always happened. Although, I mean, you alluded to the fact that there have been various controversies about the Grammys in recent years. And then, I mean, if you remember, I mean, because of the year 2020 has been, it kind of feels like this happened a lifetime ago, but it actually happened at the start of 2020, where the Recording Academy had their relatively recently appointed boss, Deborah Duggan, who joined them, I think, in 2019. And then just before the 2020 edition of the Grammys, she spectacularly quit, made all sorts of allegations about bad management and discrimination within the Recording Academy itself. And then when she went legal, there were also allegations about dodgy dealings when it came to putting together the nominations and the shortlists. So, you know, we had somebody who was at the top of the Recording Academy, left in an explosive fashion, made a number of allegations. So maybe that has resulted in more artists who have missed out on nominations this year being critical, because despite the fact that Recording Academy and Harvey Mason have repeatedly, since Deborah Duggan made all those allegations in January, tried to deny everything that she said, including what she said about the way the shortlists are put together. If you're going to have a conspiracy theory about dodgy stuff happening, The fact that the recent CEO of the Recording Academy is saying that dodgy stuff is going on behind the scenes, well, that fuels the conspiracy theory.
Yeah, and Halsey, when she spoke out about the controversy around the awards, and the controversy being that she hadn't got any nominations, she went into specifics, whereas, you know, the Weeknd had just sort of said, well, this is annoying, isn't it? She said, the Grammys are an elusive process. It can often be about behind-the-scenes private performances, knowing the right people, campaigning through the grapevine with the right handshake, and bribes that can be just ambiguous enough to pass as not bribes. She also fed into that conspiracy theory about the Weeknd, saying that committing to exclusive TV performances so that the Recording Academy can earn millions in advertising is one way that artists can be sure to get nominations, and that it's not always about the music or quality or culture.
Yeah, she then added that the Weeknd deserves better. And so did she. It was her opinion. And while insisting that she was pleased for her friends that had been nominated, she was basically saying there's not enough transparency, there needs to be more transparency. And she concluded by saying, I'm now probably blacklisted from the Grammys for life by being outspoken in this way, but I don't care. I just want this to be sorted.
Yeah, it's a funny thing to say, like, yeah, this whole process is corrupt. And everyone cheats their way into it. But I'm very excited for all my friends who've been nominated. Whether or not she is now blacklisted, who knows? But, I mean, she hasn't got any nominations this year. Maybe she was already blacklisted. But as well as that, I mentioned Ellie Goulding, who wrote a whole blog post, I mean, very generally about awards, but quite clearly about what was going on with the Grammys, basically claiming that there's a lack of transparency with awards in general, and that the right people don't get awards. It's very hard to know what the benchmark for being awarded for your work as a musician is. And she wants the whole music industry to have a big discussion about how we decide how people are given awards.
Now, it is probably worth sharing at this point the fact that CMU has had a pretty consistent editorial viewpoint on music awards for quite a long time now, which we've expressed in the CMU Daily on countless occasions, which is when people get angry about shortlists, you know how everyone gets angry every year, don't they, about the Mercury shortlist, for example, or the Brit nominations, or the Grammy nominations, and whether that's artists getting angry, or media people getting angry, or fans getting angry, it's really important to remember that all awards are a bit of a nonsense. I mean, just the idea of putting artists that are making incredibly different kinds of music up against each other. I mean, on one level, that's kind of funny and interesting, but on another level, it's kind of stupid. And then, you know, you have awards where it's like, well, I mean, take the Brits and the Grammys. Are we awarding success? Are we awarding creativity? What are we awarding here? And does it matter? And I mean, ultimately, why are there so many bloody music awards? Because there's a lot. We know that. There's an awful lot of music awards. Why are there so many music awards? Well, because A, they're useful marketing platforms for the music industry, because it's a way of getting everyone talking about a record that came out 7 months ago again, so they all start streaming it again and we make more money. So they're useful marketing platforms. And then a lot of awards exist because they make money. You sell tickets, you sell sponsorship, and there are plenty of, you know, trade publications and music magazines and trade organizations for whom their awards are their cash cow. It's how they make money. And it keeps those trade organizations and those trade publications and those media in business, and that's probably a good thing. But in terms of looking at awards as being something that is genuinely, well, it's just all so subjective, isn't it? So the idea that awards are always going to be consistently championing the best music, well, I mean, that's not what the awards are about, and how you're defining best music. So basically, they're all a bit of a nonsense. Everyone should stop worrying about it, I think, is our viewpoint.
Do you know, the other day I watched the video of, is it the 1998 Brit Awards, when Belle and Sebastian won Best Newcomer at the Brits, when they were on their third album already, and they beat like Billy Piper and Steps. It's still funny, even now.
But of course, and you know, for those people who are not old enough to remember that, which is probably a lot of people tuning in, that was because, I remember this, because we knew the guys at Jeepster Recordings, to whom Belle and Sebastian were signed to at the time. Actually, I probably shouldn't even reveal this. We found out that they'd won. And then we told the label. So they already knew that they had won. I probably shouldn't be even including this in set list. I would add that when one of my colleagues rushed down to the betting shop with that information, they'd stopped taking bets. So clearly, the betting companies knew when the BBC staff were getting their running orders for the evening. But crucially, the reason why Belle and Sebastian won that year against all those big pop acts was because it was one of the first awards that was voted for online. And that's long enough ago that pop acts didn't really have an online fan base. But Belle and Sebastian had the sort of fans who were very early to the internet. So that was why Belle and Sebastian won. It was just a quirk of the way that things had been voted for that year.
Yes.
And then you get into the whole thing, don't you, of those awards which are voted for by the public, because it's only the public that matter, artists will say. But then it's like, but aren't the charts that every single week? Don't we have a weekly thing about what's popular with the public? So, yeah, I don't know. They're all a bit of a nonsense.
I think that was the funniest thing, or one of the funniest things about the Belle and Sebastian thing, is that it's announced as best newcomer voted for by the listeners of Radio 1, as if all of the listeners of Radio 1 are massive Belle and Sebastian fans.
And then it wasn't that the following year they introduced a new award. I think it was Best Live Act or something, that was clearly, because Steps were really pissed off and Pete Waterman was really pissed off.
Pete Waterman was particularly angry, yeah.
So the next year they basically introduced an award, which was the Steps Award for being Steps. A bit like, wasn't there that year, I'm half remembering all of this now you've brought up the Brits. We're not even here to talk about the Brits. But wasn't there the year when it was a big year for One Direction and they weren't nominated in anything?
So they gave them they invented the Global Success Award.
The One Direction Award for being One Direction. Basically, awards are a nonsense. I'm not sure people should worry about them, is the point.
But worry about them, people do. I mean, The Weeknd and Halsey and Ellie Goulding are not the only artists who have complained about it. Justin Bieber also had some complaints.
Despite being nominated.
Yeah, Justin Bieber has 4 nominations at next year's Grammys. He's just annoyed that he's not nominated in the right categories.
Which, of course, is another ongoing theme when awards are dished out at those awards events that have genre categories. I mean, obviously not all award ceremonies do, but the Grammys, because they have about 8,009 categories, they have to have genre categories to justify that. Was it last year or the year before? Tyler, the Creator, was complaining, wasn't he, that his album was in the wrong category because they just looked at him and said, oh, you must be rap, when actually he'd brought out a pop album, not a rap album.
Yeah.
And to an extent, Bieber's kind of arguing, not quite, but almost the opposite.
Yes, Bieber's saying, I very intentionally made an R&B album, but I've not been nominated in any R&B categories. I've been nominated in the pop categories, and that doesn't make any sense.
Said pop star Justin Bieber. So, I guess what we're doing here is, on one level, we're defending the owners and operators of all of these music awards, in that, in some ways, there is no right or wrong way of doing it. I mean, it is true that there is sometimes some decisions being made behind closed doors, even if there is, you know, a survey or a vote of a group of people or the public. You do sometimes think maybe some decisions have been made behind the scenes so that they can get the biggest act of the moment on stage, because then more people will tune in and the sponsor will be happy. So maybe some stuff is going off behind the scenes with some awards events, not all of them by any means. But on one level, we're defending awards organisers by saying, realistically, there's no completely fair way of doing it that everyone will be happy with. Whatever you do, you're probably going to be criticised. But at the same time, organisers of awards, we also think that everything you do is a bit of a nonsense. And maybe the solution to this is to shut down all awards. Although, if we did shut down all awards, we wouldn't get 22 minutes of podcast material out of it twice a year or 3 times a year when the Mercury's, the Grammys and the Brits shortlists are announced.
So, to conclude, the Grammy Award nominations came out. No one is happy about them, not even the artists who were nominated. But the event will still happen and trophies will be handed out, and then we can all meet back again next year for more complaining. And finally, Chance the Rapper has been sued by his former manager, Pat Corcoran, who oversaw his rise to fame. But in a lawsuit filed in Illinois last week, Corcoran accused his former client of ignoring his professional advice, then blaming him for the mixed response that fans gave his 2019 album, The Big Day, and subsequent poor ticket sales for the tour that followed that album release, then firing the manager in April this year and refusing, and this is the key thing, to pay commissions that are owed.
Yes, this was an interesting lawsuit. If you can track a copy down, it is circulating online. It's actually one of those lawsuits that very much tells a story. There's a few bits at the end where it starts talking about contract law and unjust enrichment, but most of it is telling a story. Obviously, very much a one-sided view of the story. But the first half is basically a retelling of what we already knew about how Chance the Rapper rose to fame, decided with his manager not to go the major label route, even though major labels were interested, was very proudly an independent artist. And obviously he had that time, didn't he, where he was being held up as this is the independent artist breaking the mold. This is the future. We don't need majors anymore. Keep control of your rights. Do deals with Apple Music to access marketing rather than doing deals with majors. And so it retells all of that story. And basically, as far as I can see, there was a really good partnership between Chance the Rapper and this manager, Pat Corcoran, until the start of last year. And then it seems the narrative in the next section of the lawsuit suggests that maybe Chance the Rapper's brother and dad have started to take a much more proactive interest in his career. And by early 2019, they were then starting to have a different opinion to Pat Corcoran, the manager, as to what direction Chance the Rapper's career should go into next. So the allegation is that Chance the Rapper in February last year announced without telling his manager that he was going to bring out an album last July. As that announcement had been made, the manager was like, that seems like a really silly thing to promise because we've not made this record yet. Chance the Rapper was about to get married, so clearly was going to have a few distractions before getting into the studio. And so Corcoran was like, there just isn't time to do a decent album for July and to record it and then do all the marketing around it. So we shouldn't do that. But then I think Chance the Rapper and his family were like, no, we've made the commitment now. We're going to release it. So they went into the studio. Corcoran alleges that then they were a bit lazy in the studio and there was too many distractions and a load of hangers-on getting in the way. So as a result of that, the album that came out the other end, and I quote, this is according to Corcoran, it was a freestyle-driven product of subpar quality.
Now, that album was not a flop and it got some good reviews, but it was not as popular as his previous releases, particularly among his fan base. And it was that less than enthusiastic response from fans, Corcoran claims, directly resulted in lackluster ticket sales for the following tour, which was ultimately postponed and then cancelled entirely. And all of this, Corcoran argues, was the result of Chance the Rapper increasingly ignoring his advice and instead going with the advice of his father and brother, Ken and Taylor Bennett.
Yeah, the lawsuit says, instead of acknowledging the numerous distractions and artistic compromises that inevitably resulted from time wasted in the studio, all of which contributed to a lackluster album evidenced by historically low ticket sales, Bennett ultimately blamed Corcoran for the judgment rendered by his fanbase rather than accept that his own lack of dedication had doomed the project.
Corcoran goes on to say that even after all that, after the album had failed to be as successful as they'd hoped, after the tour had been cancelled, Chance the Rapper continued to ignore his advice. And his advice by this point was just withdraw from public view and come up with a new plan for what to do next. But instead, he started agreeing to various media appearances booked by his father and brother, which the lawsuit says served only to further exacerbate the failure of The Big Day.
So, as you say, the outcome of all of this, the reason it's gone legal, is that on the 27th of April this year, the Bennett family told Corcoran that his services were no longer required, which brings us to the actual dispute, which is basically a classic. Artist manager gets sacked, is owed commission. There isn't a written contract because there's never a written contract with management. I mean, there should be. Let's stress that. If you're a manager starting out, particularly if you're managing an artist through that period where the artist's career is growing and you're doing lots of work and investing time, make sure you get a written contract. There isn't one in this case. But Corcoran says, and I mean, this is a decent argument. There was this oral agreement, which was a pretty standard management agreement in the US. So Corcoran was getting 15% of Chance the Rapper's net income. And he says, okay, it's not a written contract, but that's what we did for like 7 years.
Yeah.
So there was 7 years of taking this commission. It was never disputed. It was never questioned. And it is pretty standard practice for managers in the US. So therefore, he wants his 15% on various revenues from the last year. He also wants to enforce. Now, whether you can do this on an unwritten oral agreement, I don't know. Managers often have what we call sunset clauses, which basically means when you get sacked, you can continue to commission on a bunch of the artist's revenues for a period of time afterwards. So Corcoran is saying in America, industry standard is you have a 3-year sunset clause. So he wants to get commission he reckons he's owed from the last year or so, which is coming to over $3 million. Plus he wants his sunset clause, so he continues to get commissions for the next 3 years. Chance the Rapper's side doesn't want to do that, perhaps unsurprisingly. And it seems to be his dad who is leading on this on Chance the Rapper's side. And he's offered, according to the lawsuit, a one-off lump sum settlement of $350,000, which you will note is not $3 million and 15% of the next 3 years' worth of revenues.
No, I mean, you could argue that that's considerably less than that.
Hence the lawsuit. So breach of contract, unjust enrichment, and some other stuff in there as well. So yet to get response from the Chance the Rapper side. So it'll be interesting to see what their side of the story is and whether or not this actually gets to court. Probably won't, but interesting lawsuit to read anyway.
But that is it for this edition of Setlist. Now, I've managed to get through this one without accidentally dropping a hammer on my head.
Well done. So
that makes editing easier.
All moaning about your fake COVID. So all good when it comes to the health of Andy Malt this week.
I think my illness is being reframed in a way I'm not entirely happy with.
But you have anyway, just admitted to dropping a hammer on your head. I think
I dropped a hammer on my head because I was having a coughing fit. not because I was having it. That also, that's not exactly what happened. I managed to drop a hammer on my head while we were recording.
Last week.
You don't need to know that.
No.
Yeah, I didn't do that this week. I did it last week. You won't have noticed last week because I'm very good at editing hammer drops out of podcasts. If anyone wants to pay me to edit the sound of hammers falling on people from their podcasts, I am happy to do that. I'll just pitch for that work right now. I could sew up that market. But that is it for this edition of Setlist. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button if you haven't already, and rate, review, email us, setlist@unlimitedmedia.co.uk. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by Andy Morton, Chris Cook. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.